All right, it's 5:30. We're going to call to order the July 7th edition of Story County Planning and Zoning. Roll call, please.
Helder?
Present.
Donaldson?
Present.
Miller?
Present.
Wendt?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Brothers? Absent. Steele? Absent.
You've been provided with a tentative agenda for tonight's meeting. Are there any changes or additions to note?
I move we accept the agenda, as stated.
All signify agreement by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes of the June 5th meeting were provided. Are there any corrections or additions? Seeing none, they stand approved as corrected, as approved as mailed. This is our time for public comment. This is for members of the public to present, to address the commission regarding any matters that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone here who would like to speak to us about anything? We'll be moving forward on to item number 6, SUB 09-13, the Natty subdivision.
The first order of business before the Planning and Zoning Commission members is to actually remove this item off the table so that staff can give a brief presentation and answer any questions you may have. Yes. Motion and a second.
Motion that we remove this from tabled business from last month and so that we can hear the presentation.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We will move it off of the tabled business and have staff presentation.
I have essentially the same slide that was shown to you late last fall, but there are some modifications. Can breeze through some of it. I think everyone was on the commission. No. But I'm going to do a modified breeze through approach. I don't have a good word for that.
It's a good summary.
The property owner is Orson D. Natty. The general location, this is to the northwest, the city of Nevada. I'll show you the surrounding property location map here shortly. It is one parcel, a little under 35 acres in size. Property is currently zoned AR, agricultural residential. That does allow for lot sizes with a minimum of 1 acre on a net basis. It is currently assessed as an agricultural use, according to Story County Assessor's Office, and it's designated as a rural residential area and natural resource area on the Story County Development Plan, which, as you all know, is our land use plan. It does lie within 2 miles of the city of Nevada, and I'll discuss Nevada's comments here shortly. This is the general location map that was sent to surrounding property owners, notifying of tonight's hearing. The parcels in orange are those that did receive the notice of tonight's meeting. Those are within a quarter mile of the property boundaries. That in the yellow hatched, this in here is the property under consideration for the subdivision. It is being processed as a major subdivision plat of one lot, as you saw, into 7 lots and 3 outlots. This is being processed according to old regulations that were on the books prior to the Code of Ordinances. That's important to keep in mind because our regulations have been modified, and I can't get this to advance. Technical difficulties. Let me restart the program. See if I can do it this way. The site shots that we took, this was last November. Just in general, this is where the access road comes in from the east off of S-14 to the west, and where it then heads south. It's been a while since I took these, but I hope I'm getting these correct. This is the same shot, but a little bit further west, looking towards the south. This was looking further east. This is further east, looking again towards the south. This is one of those earlier shots. Again, at the access road, you see where the row crops are. That green strip in there would be the access road. This is a site down in the valley. Majority of this would be in outlots where it's floodplain, and then the remainder would be part of the lots that are intended for development purposes. This is looking back up the hill towards the east to that access road that goes on out to the S-14. I've actually taken a step back further west on this, so you have more of a view to the east, and you see the incline up on the kind of the middle part of the slide, then zoomed into that same location, so you saw the incline and the topographical changes. And I think I already showed you that one. And then this is looking further, basically past that tree line to the east, and you can see S-14 there, the yellow sign in the background is the terminus of S-14. I'm looking due east in that, and then where that yellow sign is, I'm now looking due west back. Then this is the most western lot, where the buildable area that would be. There were some concerns noted last fall where the buildability areas would be, so we had an opportunity to take some site shots as to where that could be potentially located. Another shot looking down the valley area that would be predominantly the floodplain and into an outlot. Again, this is being reviewed as a preliminary plat. You provide a recommendation on preliminary plats only to the Board of Supervisors, so this is your one shot of looking at this. And then, again, the City of Nevada has reviewed subdivision review authority over this as well. And again, as I said earlier, this is being looked at in vain of the old regulations that were on the books at the time it was submitted. It was vested to that process. So we looked at section 6.90, major subdivision plats. The sections that you see listed, the 6.90C, 1E, et cetera, on down, were areas where concerns were identified with the previous review to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and indeed why it was tabled. Those concerns were addressed with revisions to the plat, and I'll address those here shortly. So this is the... just to orient you, this is that S-14, east-west, going in this direction. This is the east-west access road, and then a north-south access road right here, and then another north-south access. I'm saying road, but they're not truly a road in the sense of applying our road standards. Again, because this predates the code of ordinances, this is the type of easement that would be allowed. Our current regulations would not allow this. Zooming in on that area, there were some concerns noted with the setback lines not being shown correctly. So lot 6 has been corrected to show both a 40-foot rear setback and a 50-foot front setback. In addition, the setback lines from the most westerly 50-foot access drive were not shown in the plat. Those have been shown as well. And then looking at the access road, it did not. We knew the applicant did have the minimum 50 feet that was required, but did not demonstrate that. That has now been added to the face of the plat. And then the outlot, lot 7, the majority of the floodplain has been placed in an outlot. And as an outlot, that would not allow our department to issue a zoning permit, so essentially it's a non-buildable lot. And then the areas that are potentially buildable, the building, possible building footprints have been noted as well for lot 7. So there are two potential areas to place a structure on lot 7. That was a question that staff had initially with the review. We also looked at general site planning standards found in chapter 7. The street specification standards, again, would not be applicable in total because there are they do not have to provide streets according to these past regulations. It did go through interagency review again so that we could have revised comments. We did get comments from Scott Wall that their previous concerns were addressed. Mike Cox with Story County Conservation did provide comments on the stream easement. Generally, it is sufficient, but he did want to note that there has been a history of sufficient meandering with that creek, and it may or may not stay in the same location. And if it's a possible to widen that, it would be, but it does meet the standards I've set forth. And then Margaret James, the Story County Environmental Health Director, did note that she had received a soils report and her concerns had been addressed. It does lie within 2 miles of the City of Nevada. Story County and the City of Nevada have a long-standing 28E intergovernmental agreement overseeing the subdivision land within 2 miles of the city limits. In accordance with that, the City of Nevada did review this, and they through their zoning enforcement supervisor, Sean Cole, did provide a letter to county staff as well as the applicant surveyor. They identified 7 issues. 1, the road to access lots 1 through 7 shall be designed and constructed according to SUDIS. SUDIS is a statewide urban design something specifications and urban design. 3, I don't know the exact acronym, but that also goes with 2, the road to access lots 1 through 6 shall include a turnaround. I've talked to Brad Stumbo with Stumbo and Associates, who's a surveyor, and Mr. Natty's here and can address his comments with Mr. Cole as well. There's a possibility that 1 will be waived by the city, given the history with past subdivisions in this area, specifically Pop's subdivision, of which this was an outlot. This is a requirement that has not been required of all the other subdivisions in this particular area. But I'll leave Mr. Natty to discuss his conversation today with Mr. Cole. There's also the 2, there is opportunity between lots 5 and 6 or more lot 6 to add that turnaround. And again, there's a conversation that will be had this week with the fire chief and Sean Cole and Mr. Natty as to what that looks like. But even if a turnaround is added, it will be a hammerhead or like a T-type design. It really will not affect the overall design that you're seeing this evening with the layout and the setbacks. It may shrink the lot size of lot 6, but that's like 1.7 acres, so they can still meet the minimum 1 acre net. But the overall lot layout should remain the same as you're seeing today. And then the remainder can be addressed through either development agreements or through the covenant, restrictive covenants. And your alternatives are up there. You may recommend approval and direct staff to schedule review by the board on July 15, 2014. You may recommend conditional approval and, again, set forth the July 15th, or you may recommend denial for the July 15th. I think I said 14th, July 15th. Meeting of the Board of Supervisors. I threw a lot at you. Are there questions?
I thought there was a note that access to lot 7 was, there's no access as is?
There is. There's an existing drive that has been allowed to be used for potential residential purposes, and that's governed by the Story County Engineer's Office. It does have to go through floodplain. However, Story County's floodplain regulations, which govern the use of that land, would allow the construction of a drive. It would have to be elevated, so that's passable in the 100-year flood event. But we would allow that type of a driveway to be constructed and roadway. And I have not had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Cole about that comment. It may be different if it was developed inside the city limits and how they operate the floodplain management regulations, but our Story County's regulations, which would govern this, would allow for that. So there is adequate access.
Okay.
that lot 7, is there a full 1 acre that's completely out of the floodplain?
I think, well, it's been a while since I've done the analysis. I think, let me go back to this one slide.
When you did you have any discussions with the folks at Nevada?
I had the opportunity to talk to Sean last week, or maybe the previous week, to just follow up on his comments and find out whether this had been scheduled for city planning zoning commission, and he had said it had not yet, that he was waiting to have a conversation with Mr. Natty and Mr. Stumbo.
And its specific location in terms of annexation of that property into Nevada?
I don't see that annexation would be moving that far west in like a 20-year time horizon. It is, yeah. There are some hurdles to gain annexing that property. It is that most northern, that area I'm circling right there is about 1.9 acres. Yeah.
That would be right here.
It is pointer. So this circle right here is about 1.9 acres.
This one?
That's outside the floodplain. And then this one to the south is about 0.08 acres.
One is lot 7.
This is in lot 7, right.
Both.
They're both part of lot 7. Lot 7 is this very long.
So the buildable part is, point to that right now. The build, right there.
The options have been identified.
So, can you point out to us again where the floodplain is?
The floodplain, specifically for lot 7 or overall? I don't think I have the whole plat on here, but I can show you on the plats but for lot 7, everything that's in an outlot is in the floodplain, in what we call the 100-year floodplain. And then if you look over here on the west of lots 4 through 6, all those outlots are floodplain as well. And that was a discussion that staff had with the applicant, that is the county's preference that anything that is in the map floodplain be designated as an outlot. So we know that is not buildable, and we cannot issue a zoning permit in that area, which means the only type of floodplain permits that could be issued would be non-structural in nature.
Pretty flooding this year, considering all the rain we've got into that area.
I drove by. Do you remember when I went out, Kristen? It was like 2 weeks ago, Friday. But before the heavier rain and ending the Indian Creek watershed, and it didn't even really look that high as opposed to where the roadbed was. But I have not gone out. That was, I think it was 2 weeks ago last Friday I'd gone out, but I haven't gone out since the past rains. Maybe the applicant can address that too. Answer that question.
I thought it was listening if there are good night talks with comments about the possible dangers of the stream.
West line of easement on a small portion of outlot D might need to be modified. Is that a question for the applicant as to whether that will be addressed, or do we have that been addressed?
The new comments that Mr. Cox just has gave since we sent this back out for an agency review. So what you're looking at right now this evening does not reflect that comment. But that could be a condition of approval that you ask that the plat be modified to reflect such. Does that answer it?
Any other questions for Leanne at this time?
Yeah, I have one more. In the staff report, there was a discussion about public versus public easement versus access easement. Could you explain that a little bit? I don't know that I understand. It had to do with setbacks and...
Yeah. Okay. Our ordinance does not really specify that. Well, the heart and soul of it was these were just considered access easements. And while if it came into our current regulations, they would be dedicated to the public and constructed as a road. And so it would be clear that the setbacks are measured from that boundary back. Because they're not dedicated to the public and they're just called an access easement, technically those setbacks don't have to be measured from that, but it's a good practice to measure from that. And so staff took the standpoint that they need to be measured on that, as if it were a public access easement rather than just a regular old access easement.
Questions? Mr. Nady, are you interested in presenting your case at this time? You'll come to the microphone and state your name and address.
My name is Orson Nady. I live at 910 C Avenue, Nevada, Iowa. I guess, do you guys want to ask me questions, or should I talk about me meeting with Sean today? And kind of fill you in on... Okay. So I met with Mr. Cole today to address the issues that the city had. And we talked about a few things as far as, let me skip a page here. Okay, the SUDIS rules and then also the turnaround. Both of those we were going to discuss with the fire chief to decide exactly what he wanted for a turnaround and where he wanted it. And that meeting is supposed to happen this week. Sean is going to get a hold of the fire chief, hopefully today or tonight, yesterday or today, and then we can get together this week. And then we also talked about the street light and the construction specifications for the water main and the hydrant, and that we would all just add into the covenants. And the two portions of Lot 7 that were within the floodplain that were actually on the driveway that he wrote here that needed to, it made it inaccessible. He said that we could make it accessible, but what we needed to do is we had to put a plat note in, is what he wanted. So I think that was pretty much all the concerns that he had. Like I said, I haven't talked to the fire chief, and possibly a letter from the EMS. I'm hoping that that'll come with the fire chief. But everything else, I think I've gotten to up to code with the county. So I guess hopefully I can have a meeting with Sean and the fire chief, and we can move forward and get on that docket. Oh yeah, there was water definitely above the creek. I plant just deer food plots kind of right next to the creek, and I'd say the water was out above the creek banks, probably at least 100 feet away from the creek down there. It wasn't anywhere close to the road coming in for Lot 7, and then for everything coming out for the 6 lots coming off S14. There's never really an issue getting down in there. Possibly at the very bottom of that driveway for the lots for 1 through 6, I would assume there's going to have to be a culvert or something that would go in, just because there is some runoff coming down from the north there from that farm. But everything else looked good.
I have a question about the process for the plat.
Okay.
Some of it's just background information kind of thing, but what is the process for you know, making these changes and additions to the plat before the Board of Supervisors meeting?
I would take all that to Brad Stumbo in Ames, and then he does make all the necessary changes.
Describe the road that will access lots 1 to 6.
Yeah, it'll start at S14, which is actually a road that's going back there right now for about the first, let's say, 200 yards or something like that to access Samson's lot. So I would just continue. It's actually like, you see this one going right up there, it goes through about there, so I would continue that line straight west and go to where it comes into lot 4 and then turn it south and go all the way to lot 6. The questions that I have for the fire chief is to whether or not he wants to turn around to be kind of in the corner of lot 6 like this, or maybe up in the corner of lot 4 in the northeast corner of each lot. And I guess that, you know, the width, I was going to ask, you know, both him and Sean as to what they thought for that, too. I mean, he needs to be able to turn a fire truck around, so I don't know if we need 100 foot or something. And then also, I guess there is an easement through lots 1 and 2 on the east side of lots 1 and 2 to build a drive going into there to lot 3.
Planning on this being a rock road from the S14 back to the lot?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
If we have any comments from the neighbors?
I don't think we have any written comments in the files, but I know there are neighbors here present that do want to speak.
Okay.
When it's their turn. I would assume, since they showed up, that they want to be covered.
Yep, I would assume that too.
Are you planning on going ahead and developing lot 7 right away, or would you do 1 through 6 first, and do you have any plans that direction? Lot 7's a little...
I believe 1 through 6 first. Lot 7, my wife, my kids, we all go out there, so that's kind of our little area. You know, we live in town right now. You know, maybe in the future we would end up living on Lot 7 is kind of what our thoughts are. So I guess I'd move forward with Lots 1 through 6, and Lot 7 would be kind of the one, like I said, that I would keep.
Is the access road to Lot 7 on the plat? I didn't see it.
It is. It's lower. So
it's actually right here. There's a cemetery right here.
Okay, yeah.
So the access road,
there's a driveway going into the cemetery on the east side of the cemetery, and then my driveway is just to the east of that. That's the driveway where Sean mentioned that he wanted a plat note to state that if there's ever a driveway built, that we'd have to put a culvert in and go high to get over that little floodplain area. There's two spots on it that Brad marked, kind of where the actual lot of 7 bottlenecks in. Which I guess if you were going to build in the south building envelope, basically just north of the cemetery, that second flood area wouldn't really come into question, because I guess you're not going to build a driveway past your house.
Would you like me to give you a little more time, or should we move on to public comment? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone public that would like to comment on this proposal? And if so, you may come to the podium and state your name and address and give your comments.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be shy. I don't get it. They came.
My name is Keith Hobson. I live at 21101 620th Avenue, which is the lot. And then, can you bring it up?
This lot right here. So this
subdivision wraps around our property. We've owned that lot for about 20 years. It was the first subdivision of the Boswell property out there. So we were by our lonesome for so recently in that area. And I brought up a lot of things last time, so I won't bring those up again in November, I guess it was.
If you have valid concerns, then I wasn't here in November, and neither was he, so... These would be concerns that we haven't heard. If you could summarize.
Okay. I'll just bring up a couple of them and do that. When we developed this lot, at the time, the County Conservation Commissioner was Steve Lekla, and he did an inspection of the area, and there were some native prairie remnant plants in this area that he wanted protected. Now, apparently the current county conservation director either didn't look at that or wasn't that concerned about it. So that brought that up last time, because that was an issue that we had to, that was actually put on our plot, that we had to try to maintain for the rest of the property. And actually, since that time, we've planted a lot of new prairie out in the east part, what was farmland before. But there is some area on the west side of our fence that is native that he had noted before. So that was just something to be, I guess, aware of. That would be kind of from this area down to the creek, you know, down in this area here. Most all the other things, Orson and Stumbo, I think, have addressed. A couple of the points that I had brought up is, yeah, I know the city does have requirements about, I used to be the city engineer in Nevada also way back, so I know about some of the requirements, but I know they do require some turnarounds, and I think that can be done with his plot here. He's going to have to maybe expand these easement areas, you know, to do that, to provide for that. And I know some of the other subdivisions that we've done in the area, the subdivider has been required to put in the streets and utilities for the lots. I know that wasn't the case for this top division here, but for most, or maybe not all, but most of the others in Curry County around Nevada, I know we've had to put in streets and utilities to serve these. And maybe that's what this Nevada review is talking about here, because that hadn't been done last time when this was reviewed. To kind of confirm what Orson said, this last event we had was not really big. It did flood the lower area, but you know, this zone A that we're talking about here is kind of what's commonly referred to as a 100-year storm event, and that's what this outlot area protects. So I think he's doing, you know, doing that from what we had before. And this area has not really gone through a detailed flood process. Areas out in the county were just kind of estimated. And so the FEMA maps are just kind of overlaying on these maps to kind of get the best that we can. And I think that's what's been done here. And I agree with what Orson said on this side over here, this lot 7. Even though there might be some areas where the flood kind of encroaches on that, you know, I think as long as the county allows them to fill that in, and maybe this area up here might even be kind of a ditch area where you put a culvert or something in to get across on that. I think that should work. I guess our concern is that the subdivision gets done right, that it just doesn't get left half done, and I'm not sure if the county, you know, can do anything about that. I guess the only other point I wanted to bring up, which I think I brought up last time, was in Mr. Cox's comment, he mentioned this section 7.50, and I'm not sure if that's what this is or not, but there's a county requirement that you can only cut down like 10% of your trees without replacing them or something to that effect. And these lots in here, some of the lots, 1, 2, and 3, are all tree lots.
Ian, can you scroll up? Scroll up. Thank you.
These lots here are all tree lots. So in order to get you can get this one in because I think that's plowed, and you can get this access way in because it's out in the field area. But I don't know how they build on these lots with that requirement. So I'm not sure how that's applied in the county or how this whole property here was a CRP. It was originally plowed, and then it was a CRP. So about 20, 21 or 22 years ago, Mr. Boswell planted trees on these properties, on some of these properties here, and as seedlings, and then developed it as a CRP to what it is today. I think that's all I've got. If you have any questions, I've been out there a while. I have some history on the area. But.
Well, you actually just answered one of my questions because I noticed in the picture the trees all line up, and so they were planted.
Yeah. Unfortunately, one third of these trees are ash trees, so we're not sure what's going to happen with that.
Is there anyone else who would like to come to the podium at this time? Don't forget to state your name and address.
Erin Steen Wilkinson, and I live 4830 Waller Street in Ames, and I own these.
Right. These are ours.
So that's our future home. But I was just wondering if I could get a little clarification on 1 through 6 with the road. I'm just a little confused with how you were talking today. It looks like you've got two driveways going into 1, 2, 3, and then a driveway going into 4, 5, 6. Is that how it's going to be?
Correct. There actually just an easement for the...
Orson, you have to come on. Because it looks like on 1, 2, 3, the front setbacks are on the east side of the road, not the west, like you had talked about.
The way it was presented, the primary entrance for these three lots is along this north-south road on the east, or access easement on the east side of the houses. So that's the front setback. This becomes a rear setback. And then these homes have front setback on this north-south road, too.
Yeah.
So they're going to go, it'll be 1, 2, 3 going in on the first driveway?
Well, or they could come in on that other driveway. They'd have access to come in on the west or on the east sides of lot 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
So the turnaround that I briefly discussed with Sean would be somewhere in between the row of lots.
Okay. Will you have to flip-flop your setbacks then? I mean, lot 1 and 2 are set back on the east side.
I don't know. That would be a question for Bradstone, though.
Okay.
I think if the primary, yes.
Okay. Okay, so if you did a turnabout, would you not turn about lot 3 then, too, and just make it more of a round cul-de-sac for all 6 lots for uniformity of access, possibly?
Basically do away with this access easement, make this the primary, and bring it down cul-de-sac or whatever, so it would access all 6 lots back here would access off this side. So all would have front setback on that road, and then this would all have rear setbacks over here and rear setbacks back here, if I understood. Is that what you're asking?
Right, so it would just be one road, basically? Come in and turn around?
Because that's the way when you talked about it, that's how you kind of described it.
So that's my thought, is to just build that one road and come in between all 6 lots.
Okay, so you'll flip-flop those first 3 lots on the setbacks and everything.
Yeah. I was going to leave the access easement there for lots 1, 2, and 3, just if they wanted it. That was my thought, so that they could break. But the main driveway would go in between all 6 of them.
Okay.
So that's what I would rock, and then put the, I think, fire hydrant at the corner, and I don't know, I'm going to turn around there.
Can you use the pointer and point where your lot is?
We are right down here. So we're kind of snuggled up on the other side of Top. So we're lot B and then all the way up to S14. There's 3 of them in here. So.
Have you built on it yet? But that you bought it with that plan.
Mm-hmm. And we're just going to, this is owned by my longtime family friend. She's the front one. And my husband and I are going to own the back 2 and the outlot. So it'll just be 2 houses out there at some point. So we bought it with some long-term planning. We have noticed walking out there that the water does go up almost at times. It's appeared to have gone up that far. I mean, by the sandy soil, you can tell it's been that high. We've seen it up into the trees here last year when it was very heavy in May. So I know my husband, who's not here this evening, has had a little concerns with any, I don't know how much they're going to have to build up the road for 7, if much at all, but if that build up, will it all change the flow of the water further up onto ours? So, because he's concerned if with that boundary being so right on that come insurance times they might, you know, say, nope, that's floodplain now. So, he's living in Ames. We've watched what Ames has done to their town and kind of gone, ooh. But,
Before you built, of course, there would have to be, am I right, Leanne, a conditional use permit before she built? Okay.
Great zoning permit to our department.
Yeah, we don't intend on, we've got this outlot that's in the floodplain currently, so, and I don't think they have any intention of redrawing floodplain maps anytime soon. That's why Ames would be in trouble. But, other than my question about how the entries to 1 through 6 was going to change and what that would do to setbacks, I don't know where the turnabout would end up, but if it was up there, like you talked about, is it possible that it would put lot 5 under the 1 acre since it's very close? I'm not sure, but that's probably a question for Brad Stumbo to rework out. So. Yeah, and Hobson addressed our kind of concern about the trees, too. I'm sure there's some plans to maintain kind of the naturalness to it and and everything. And I know our part of Pop's subdivision was not the best planned subdivision as far as roads set in and share of use. It would have benefited greatly from some better road planning on his part. You know, because we've got, I know on these three up here, Samson can get in. I know by the covenant he's supposed to share your driveway, isn't it? He's supposed to, but I think he uses this access road, so he's got, you know, multiple driveways. There's driveways everywhere up here. And we share a main entrance driveway that's just one drive with the Borwicks down to the south of us. But it was, you know, it's kind of poorly planned as far as putting it in and, you know, how to get utilities. So it'd be nice if there were better rules, but I know you're kind of confined to what you have to work with.
Well, we've got better rules now, as opposed to...
Well, unfortunately, they don't fall under the new rules. So, he's fine. So.
Well, I know that his doesn't fall under the new rules.
Yeah, and I don't think you can... I mean, there's nothing to say, you know, please plan your roads properly and run water, but at least, you know, the city does say fire hydrants and stuff, because I don't think even we have that. And I know you had mentioned the annexation. I believe... ours is annexed. We have the possibility to be annexed. Our subdivision, it was in our contract. Mm-hmm.
It's a new development agreement.
So I don't know what that would do with his being that it's near us or anything, but we are possibly under the rules of Nevada if they ever annex us. So.
Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to come to the podium? You may. Just restate your name.
Sorry, Keith Hobson again. And for the record, we don't really want to be annexed, but...
No kidding.
I had one question. I kind of on. I remember Leanne had said something about outlots and not being able to build on outlots. And I don't know if Orson was aware of this, but part of outlots... right in like this area right here is actually out of the floodplain. I don't know if somebody would ever want to do anything there or not, but I don't know if someone in the future can they subdivide out lot C again to, if they wanted to build there, or is that allowable?
Our definition of an outlot allows for future subdivision of land, but I think this has a qualifier, this plat has the standard qualifier that no further divisions or subdivisions are permitted. So, in short, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it said on the bottom. Okay.
Thank you. One more time. Anybody else coming to the podium? All right, we'll close public comment at this time. Are there any additional questions for staff or for Mr. Natty?
I don't know if it's a question. I guess the question for staff is there's a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of conditions or issues that have kind of been raised as we're discussing this. Are those conditions that we would... put to ask for further revisions, or are these conditions that we would put if we made a motion like a conditional approval?
By all means, either way. You could, again, as you've done in the past, remand it or table it. I think we've achieved the point where a lot of the changes that were addressed. The changes have addressed primary concerns that were noted last fall, that it would be appropriate to recommend conditional approval because it is the preliminary plat stage to the Board of Supervisors with basically a laundry list. If you think that laundry list is not too great, if you all are of the opinion that laundry list is so much that would affect the overall layout, and you feel like you need to see it again before you take such recommendation, then the option would be to table it. Yep.
About the native prairie concerns, is it true that since this county engineer or whoever didn't say anything about those, that we don't need to take that into consideration?
It's not that you don't need to take any consideration. I think what Keith was pointing out is it was a point that was made very poignantly when Mr. Lekla was the county conservation director, and Mr. Cox, our current conservation director, did not note that. But it is something you could recommend, just similar to the protection natural, the trees on the site, that there be a plan that addresses the natural vegetation that's there that is more inclusive than just the trees, that if there's any native prairie remnant. And there has been a history of doing that, that would be identified and come along with the final plat. We've done it in a number of cases throughout Story County.
Very good question. Now, I think Mr. Hobson said 10% of the trees?
It's no more than, they're dependent on whether or not they meet the definition of a significant tree or not, and we actually define what a significant tree is. And then we need to limit what can and cannot be removed without proper mitigation, and that mitigation has to either occur on site or within a quarter mile of the project boundaries. The regulations, even under the old regulations, are pretty specific in that regard.
I have a little illustration here that shows where I kind of thought maybe we could plant trees or prairie grasses.
The red is where the trees are.
Yeah, lots 1 and 3 are filled with trees. So there would definitely be trees that would come out of there. And eventually, if it's over the 10%, they'd have to be replanted. A lot of those trees are actually falling down and dying now with the wind. So, we'll have to, I guess, see exactly where the trees stand and what's a good tree and what isn't. But then also, a couple of the people that have lots in the area that bought from the POP subdivision also said that they would take trees too, and they're within that quarter mile. So we have some established areas for replanting trees.
I have another question while you're
okay.
I think I understand now that the plan for access to the 6 lots is to have the road in between. Running in between the three pairs.
Yeah.
How is that going to be determined? Are you guys going to build the roads, or would somebody come in and buy the lot and then have a choice as to use?
So I have a copy also of the road agreement that I had Mr. Baffy write up, and that sets it out that I'll go in and build that road. And then the maintenance will be split up between the 6 lots.
I see that there's an easement in the back on the east side of 1, 2, and 3 that gets for utilities.
I think there should be like a public utility easement, 15 feet, I think, that goes all around. Thank you.
Number 2 for me.
So I think what we need to decide is, I think from our hearing that we all agree
that at best it's going to be conditional approval. Are there enough conditions that we need to think about a different alternative? And if not, we still need to agree what the conditions are.
I've got 2 that I've noted. One is the plat note about access to number 7.
Yes.
And then the other one, the second one is the turnaround for the fire trucks or for public use.
And I would add to that
plan for native prairie concerns and trees.
I've captured all of those as well. Do you want me to give it a shot? Nancy, what do you have?
Well, I'm a little concerned that the meetings that are yet to be had, he's already had a month to hold those meetings. You see what I'm saying?
I'm a little bit concerned as well, Nancy, about all of this.
We've been talking about this since last November.
And I feel a little bit like at this point we should either be able to say yes or no, and not have to have a conditional, or at least not with this many conditions.
I didn't follow you.
I feel like at this point we should be able to either say
unconditionally
recommend, which we think we cannot do, or we should say denial. Because if we use the conditional response two, we still have a long list of conditions. And I think we're too far along into this process. I think it's time to go back to send him back to the drawing boards and apply the new restriction.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Okay, if we choose number two, the conditional, all right, is it simply that they have to meet the conditions prior to July 15th?
No, not necessarily. It depends on how you word the conditions. The same preliminary plat as you see right now could be going forward to the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors may choose to accept those same conditions of approval. For example, the possible condition of approval of the plat note. That would be something that would carry forward the final platting process. Or you could conditionally approve it, say, prior to scheduling to the Board of Supervisors, you need to do A, B, and C, and once that's done, staff will put down the agenda. And with the Commission's expectations that the plat that will look different than what you're looking at right now, those concerns have been addressed before going to the Board of Supervisors. Or you could do a combination of both.
I like that.
I also have a concern. If we do the former of the two that you said, in other words, recommend it to the Board of Supervisors on a conditional basis and list the condition, who holds their feet to the fire?
Yeah.
I have one more question, because I know that we talked about at the very beginning of this, and again, I'm new here, so I don't have a lot of the history, but you talked about the approval for the POPS development and about how now you would, and I think it was mentioned, with roads and utilities and water and things, but historically that hasn't been required for some of these. I guess my question is, do we move forward based on historic, or do we move forward based on what's desired?
Legally, Mr. Natty has a vested right to bring this type of design forward based on the time that he initiated discussions with Story County. He's vested to the regulations in effect at that time. So I
this
know
is November, right?
This dates back several years.
Several years, okay. This is the 2010 date, all right.
Story County cannot apply those regulations.
All right, and so it's a matter of the regulation of requiring utilities and water and things currently that wouldn't apply.
Well, there's two different things occurring. One is the City of Nevada has changed how they are approaching rural subdivisions in the specific area, and applying additional regulations that are on their books and probably were with the POP different subdivisions that came through as well that they chose to waive. It sounds like they may not be choosing to waive those regulations anymore and choosing to apply those. Nevada has the right to do that because they have subdivision authority. And that's one thing that's occurring. On the county's end, we cannot apply our new regulations.
Unless we deny it.
Unless it's denied and the Board of Supervisors agrees with that and they bring forward a new submittal.
night, it goes to the Board of Supervisors.
And but like it's just a recommendation.
Yeah, but right. They're going to, they're pretty, history is that they're pretty well going to go along with what our recommendation is. That's my experience with the Board of Supervisors. I continue to have this concern that we've kicked this can down for 8 months. And we've had all this time to accomplish, you know, every time we keep adding things that it's like,
can you tell us what your recommendation is?
Staff doesn't give recommendations.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So I'm on the fence, but again, I'm the new guy. So I'm going to try and craft a motion that includes all of those, and then
I'd like to ask a question before, and then that because
that's no,
that's
fine.
Motion,
that's
yes.
Fine. Go for it.
So we can put conditions that the staff will enforce, and we can recommend that that not go to the Board of Supervisors until the conditions are met.
Right.
Deadline on that.
Okay. When's the August Board of Supervisors meet?
The Board of Supervisors meet weekly.
What?
Supervisors or
B&Z? B&Z.
Supervisors?
Yeah. I mean, who?
Every Tuesday at 10. The very next one is the 15th that she's got up there.
Right.
And the next one's 22nd and so on.
Thinking of maybe a little bit more time because of the list of things to include. But so do you have a calendar that you can tell me meeting dates in August? Does that mean what you were thinking? Okay.
Dates in August are the 5th, 12th, 19th, and 26th.
All right, so I'm going to give this a try, and then you can go. So I recommend conditional approval you're right here. I'm just looking for the
SUB09.
Yeah, SUB09-13, the Navy subdivision. Based on the conditions of that it includes a plan to mitigate loss of significant trees and prairie, and that there are plot corrections to address several concerns, that it has a specific plan for Lot 7 access with either a culvert, elevated road, or both, that the plat is corrected for the single main access road with corrected setbacks, so that if it needs to flip the setbacks for 1, 2, and 3, that it includes a plat correction that includes the turnaround as required by emergency services, that the access easements are measured from the boundaries for the access easement as if it was a public easement. There's an easement that needs to be measured as the setback, and it's different between if it's a public easement versus an access easement. Leanne mentioned that at the beginning. Am I right, Leanne? Okay. So the recommendation is that the plat is corrected and it aligns those easements as if they were a public easement, and they meet that public easement requirement, not the lesser, which is the access easement. And then the last one is that the plat is corrected for Lot D as needed for the creek meandering. I don't have a definition of what that would require.
I think it would just need to be widened in that particular area.
Okay. So widened for lot D for just
on guidance by
based on guidance by Mr. Cox on his feedback. Did that hit everybody's high point?
I think you did an excellent job.
Are you going to do a deadline then?
Oh, and this is the deadline is the 12th to be completed by the 12th of August to be presented at when does it need to be completed to be presented at the
Friday before?
No, I would say so staff has time to review and make sure and get the notices out would be no later than August 4th.
Okay. So to be completed no later than August 4th so that staff can review, send notifications, so that it can be presented to the Board of Supervisors at the meeting on the 12th, or as determined by the staff if they need more time. Second.
Repeat it. Kristen can repeat it.
It's been seconded. Now we're open for discussion on this.
A what?
Someone? Asking for a letter from EMS, Emergency Management Services.
For the turnaround?
Well,
which is the meeting that he's saying that will happen this week? Is that what you're talking about? That was the fire chief? Wasn't that the meeting with the fire chief?
What are you wanting to have?
I want something in writing from them.
That the plat and the turnaround meets EMS requirements.
And EMS is the fire chief? That's the question.
I would say concurrence from the Nevada fire chief that the proposed turnaround suffices for design to meet his standards.
In writing.
Are you interested in allowing that to be part of your motion?
Yes. Can we amend the motion, or do we need to double it and try it again?
No. Seconder accepts the amendment. I think, and you guys are doing it as a friendly amendment, it sounds like.
So a friendly amendment to my motion to provide a written agreement from the Nevada fire chief that he agrees with the turnaround as outlined in the revised plat.
Are we clear what we're voting on? Does anyone have any...
But now we can have further discussion? All right. If these conditions are not met by August 4th, to be presented August 12th, okay? If they are not, then at our next PNC, which won't be till September after that, right? When's our August PNC?
I think what you're getting at, Nancy, what happens if the conditions aren't met? I think possibly if you direct staff, say, then this needs to go on the August 12th agenda of the Board of Supervisors. Here are our recommended conditions of approval. Mr. Natty, here's the time frame for doing that. It would still go on the August 12th planning our Board of Supervisors agenda. And if those conditions are not met, we would very clearly say they're not met. And then the
recommendation would be denial if the conditions are not met. Or
well, we can't change your recommendation. I mean, but
recommendation is for approval based on meeting all of these requirements.
So that
then the question is if they don't.
Right, and at that point the board can choose to accept and say, or they could take the position and say, you were given time to address these concerns, you didn't. We're going to deny it. I think that's different in the past where there's been a recommendation and the board just accepted it. I mean, in this case, you're doing a recommendation conditionally approving it, and right. If those conditions aren't met, the board could agree, see that there was some concern from mentioned reading between lines by the Planning and Zoning Commission that maybe this shouldn't be approved if those aren't satisfied or addressed.
That seems...
And then it would not come back to us unless they submitted a totally new... Right?
Right.
Okay, I'm good.
Does that satisfy your concerns, Nancy?
Mm-hmm. It does. Because they're kicking the can, which has got to stop.
Well, and I think that we're
in November, right?
Yeah.
Of 13.
I think that we're okay with moving forward with approval so long as these things are
yep.
addressed, right?
I'm good.
I think so too. And I think these are not such things.
They're not,
but they're unbeatable.
Yeah, I don't think they're insurmountable.
They're not petty any either.
I think more it's just meant to address the concerns of kind of cleaning up the plan and addressing concerns of neighbors, right? Losing trees and vegetation and flooding and access and things. I think that meets those.
Further discussion, the motion before us is conditional approval of SUV 09-13 with several conditions stated. There's no further questions on what those conditions are. We'll have a roll call vote.
Miller?
Yes.
Wendt?
Aye.
Couser?
Aye.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. Next on our agenda is number 7, Old Business. Is there anything there? Number 8 is 8.1 CUP 08-14 Beanie. Conditional use permit. Looks like Charlie's up. Charlie?
Hello.
But that Leanne's officially retired, right?
Underestimate the power of an HR department.
That was a challenge. Thanks for all your patience. That was a challenge. Thanks for all your patience and hard work.
Yeah. If you're ready, we'll move on. All right. As you have mentioned, this is a conditional use permit request from Horizon Wireless. The property in which the conditional use permit is being requested for is owned by Lester and Ruth Schickel. It's generally located in Section 29 of Franklin Township. It's located approximately 1/10 mile north of Onion Creek Lane and 1/10 of a mile east of North Dakota Avenue. The size of the parcel is a little under 30 acres. The lease area that the cell tower will be leasing out is about 5,500 square feet, which is approximately 75 by 75 foot lease area. Zoning in place on the property is A1 agriculture. It is classified as agriculture currently for property assessment purposes. It is currently just open space with some ag crop production ground taking place. The Abram Fringe Plan, which is a component of the County Development Plan, does designate the property as urban residential, which is a subcategory of the urban service areas. And obviously, this property is within 2 miles of the City of Ames, as it is in the Abram Fringe Plan. Got the SPO map that was sent to the surrounding property owners here. This kind of shows North Dakota Avenue running generally right here. You've got Onion Creek Lane back here. This is the property owner consideration. If you zoom down here, kind of see where this yellow dot is here. That is actually the location of where the cell tower will be. So it gives you kind of an idea on the scale of the property where exactly it will be. And as we had mentioned, it's approximately 1/10 mile from North Dakota, 1/10 of a mile from Onion Creek Lane. This is for a conditional use permit to construct a 120-foot tall monopole communication tower. It is proposed to have 12 antennas with an 11.5 by 29.5 equipment shelter, all located in a 75-foot by 75-foot east area. The tower would be erected, owned, and managed by SBA Towers V, LLC, and the equipment space will be subleased to Verizon Wireless. Communication towers and facilities are considered a conditional use in the A1 zoning district. They are subject to supplemental standards, and all conditional use permits are approved and denied by the Board of Adjustment after a recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission. A few site shots that we did here, if you kind of look where this arrow is right here, it gives you an idea of the direction that we were looking. This is looking right off North Dakota onto the property, looking generally in the area that the cell tower will be. You can see there are some large trees here that will somewhat shade that from the road. This one, looking just a little bit down the road right here, again, looking onto the property, and again, you can see those trees along the road here that will buffer the tower. This one's looking from the intersection of Onion Creek Lane here in North Dakota, looking more to the north, and again, you can see the trees that will kind of help transition that area. This one's actually looking back on Onion Creek Lane here over the open field. You can see there is a stack of hay bales right here. Those are actually right here on the aerial, but you can see if you look that that'll actually be probably right about in this area, and you can see out of all the areas that we've looked at so far, that's probably about the only one that doesn't have a good buffer from the tower as far as site view. But again, you're located nearly a quarter mile, I'd say, from where that tower will be back to this point here where there are some single-family dwellings. This one looking again, this is down on the right where that sharp corner on North Dakota Avenue is here, and again, looking up toward where the tower will be up in this area. And the last one actually is from the entrance of the Iowa State Farm up here. Get it back in this area here. So again, you kind of get a good idea of just from the multiple viewpoints on that area exactly where the tower will be located. Looking through all the regulations, I do believe the commission did review a cell tower as of recently, so I won't go through all these standards one by one, but they are on the screen. They were included in the staff report. The supplemental standards, I've just kind of summarized those here as well. Going through that, though, looking at the staff report, staff did point out a few things. First, that there are no concerns on the proposed development's conformance to traffic. Parking, loading, sign, lighting are environmental protection, and that's pretty standard with cell towers and conditional use permits for cell towers. If the commission were to agree with that, they do need to determine that the proposed development's conformance to both the compatibility and the transition standards. Most communications towers within the unincorporated area of Story County are located in the A1 zoning district, and that is what is being proposed here. However, this particular piece of ground is planned as a future residential use in the Ames River Fringe Plan, and being that it is in that urban service areas, the City of Ames has identified this piece of land as a piece of ground that they will, their policy, I should say, is to annex it by year 2030, I think. Staff standpoint at this point is we can make an argument that they're well behind some of those projections, so maybe it won't reach this by that year, but again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan does identify that that's where the growth will take place by year 2030. As you've seen through the site shots, we have visited the site and have concluded that because of the large trees and the rolling terrain of the area, that there's a pretty sufficient buffer between the proposed communication towers and North Dakota Avenue, and the existing residents within the immediate vicinity. And the applicant has stated that as part of the initial search for a feasible site, the company on behalf of Verizon Wireless looks for existing facilities for co-location. This is the initial step in any site acquisition process. According to the applicant, no existing facility meeting the needs of Verizon Wireless's network was available. The proposed wireless facility is a capacity site, which means the existing network is already built, and the proposed tower will offload some of the demands on the surrounding sites. I don't know exactly what all that means, so the applicant, I believe, is here and probably can answer some of that if you have any questions on it. But again, what they're trying to point out, and I think through their application materials they did point out, was that they have looked for co-location opportunities and there was nothing available, so this is where they're at now. All the proposed towers are to be set back a minimum of 300 feet from neighboring properties either planned or utilized for residential purposes. And again, this whole area is a planned residential area, so keep that in mind. Even more so, there is a property to the south, which this proposed tower is set back 300 feet from, that is actually zoned residential currently. Knowing that, the proposed tower is shown to be set back over 650 feet from the north property line, over 1,000 feet from the east property line, 300 feet, as I mentioned, from the south property line, and only 190 feet from the west property line. And again, getting into that 190 feet, while the tower is not set back 300 feet from that property line, the landowner who owns this parcel is the same person who owns that parcel. So the commission needs to probably determine, I think, in their recommendation, if property owned by the same owner is considered to be neighboring property, just because there's a tax parcel line there. I don't know if, you know, if that counts or not. I think in the past we've looked at it as whoever owns the property, consider that kind of one big lump sum property. And you know, again, if they're to sell that off, obviously the cell tower would be there, so it would kind of be a buyer beware at that point. The 75-foot by 75-foot lease area is proposed to be enclosed by a 6-foot wood fence. The wood fence, that type of fence, meets both the fencing requirements and the screening requirements of the ordinance. The tower is proposed to be constructed of a galvanized metal, will only have signage, which is required by the FCC, and only includes a porch-type light, which will be located on the door of the equipment shelter. The applicant did not provide any additional material regarding the site's ability to house future local co-locations of other cell antennas. However, in talking with the applicant through phone conversation, staff has been assured that this tower is able to handle additional antennas. And again, I think the applicant will speak on that tonight and just how that is possible. As usual, this did go under interagency review via email on June 16th. I believe those comments were included. I think the only one of substance probably was from the City of Ames, more or less stating that if it is ever annexed and it doesn't meet the City of Ames' current standards, that it would be considered a non-conforming use. And that's pretty common with any cell tower that's annexed in a city. And then we did place a public notice sign on the property on June 23rd. We have had quite a few phone calls from people driving by just asking what's going on, but I believe no comments on record at this point. We did send out notification letters to the surrounding property owners, and we have published legal notifications in the three official county newspapers. So with that, your four alternatives are listed on the screen here above, and if there are any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
How far does the city set back from the
garage number?
Yeah, so I think it was about 1,050, if I remember it.
1,050?
Yeah. And again, if I can get back to this screen right here.
From the west, it was only 190?
Yeah, it's 190 from here, 300 from here. I think it was some good 600 feet from here, and then about 1,000 feet from here. But this property right here, this is the border of this particular property, and it's owned by the Schickels, who also own this property right here. And this is actually where their house is, the Schickels.
So if it's annexed by Ames, then it's a non-conforming.
It's depending if it would meet. I don't know what the City of Ames cell tower regulations are, but if it would meet those regulations, obviously it would be conforming, no issue at all. However, if there was some component of those regulations that were not met at that point, it would become a legally established non-conforming use.
But we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But then
quite simply, you don't have to worry about it.
The cell tower owner would have to fix it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it would, and again, I don't know how Ames handles their stuff, but it would be something of, you know, if there's an addition made to something at that point, they might have to bring it up to code. I don't know how the City of Ames would handle that.
Everything that's in yellow is owned by Mr. Schickel?
Everything in yellow is the property that the conditional use permit is being placed on, the boundaries of it. So, actually, Schickel's, if I remember right, I did look at this. I believe they own this, and I think they own some land up and around here as well, too. But they own quite a bit of land out there.
Just ask that everything in yellow is owned by...
Yes.
As well as just to the left.
I just wanted to point out that there are other properties, too.
Charlie, our applicant, Mr. Biniak, please come to the podium, state your name with the correct pronunciation.
You're close. Good evening. My name is Mike Biniak. I'm with a company called LCC Law. Our address is 10700 Higgins Road, Suite 240, Rosemont, Illinois. And we represent both SBA Communications and Verizon Wireless. What is going on is Verizon Wireless has hired SBA Communications to build out their network for what Charlie alluded to as capacity sites. And basically what a capacity site means is the network is essentially built out. Providers or subscribers have some coverage. And the network is a grid pattern. And basically what has happened is the network was built out for people to use their cell phones, to make phone calls and send and receive phone calls. However, technology has changed since that time. Now we have all kinds of broadband, Wi-Fi, texting, all those other demands that are now put on that existing network. And what's happening is with that technology, the network coverage that was once robust has now shrunk. So what's going on is they're trying to put in infill sites that serve as capacity offloads for these existing towers. And so basically what they're trying to do is, if this is their grid, they're trying to find that center point. And as was mentioned, what they do is they hired SBA Communications to build out that portion of the network. SBA is a tower owner / management company, and the question came up about co-location of other carriers on the tower. That is an absolute. That's where SBA Communications makes their money. They want co-location on their towers. So they work with, they have what's called a master lease agreement with all the other carriers, AT&T, US Cellular, Sprint, whoever's in the region. They have master lease agreements with them. And so basically if AT&T was looking for a site or carrier X, Y, and Z, they would send out, you know, site acquisition company somewhere to us. They would look, the first thing they look for are existing towers. The path of least resistance and the thing that gets us paid quickest is to be able to get on a tower. So we don't want to go out and have to build a new tower if we don't have to. And so that's where the site acquisition agent would look for that existing tower. There's markings on the gates. They know who to call. They know the process. They would work with SBA Communications to get co-location on that existing tower. And that's why there is a 75x75 lease area so that the other carriers could go and put their equipment within that existing lease parcel. So it's designed to allow and ensure co-location. The carriers are competitors with one another, but SBA Communications, you know, works with all these carriers, so there's no exclusivity. Now, as was mentioned, we are approximately 190 feet back from that edge of that property. However, if you look at the entire parcel up to North Dakota, we're approximately 636 feet back. And the reason, if you look real close, it's kind of hard to see, the edge of the field is right here. And Mr. Schickel does not obviously want to go another 110 feet back into his field. So that's why we placed it where we did, so that we were, you know, a significant distance away from the road, but we stayed out of his tillable field. So that's why we placed it at that location. As far as the screening of the base of the tower, we are proposing a wood fence that was requested by staff. So even though the properties due to the east that are approximately 1,000 feet away, there the equipment still will not be visible at the base of the tower. Obviously, a tower is visible. You can't screen that. So, you know, but to the best of our ability, that is going to be screened. So, at this point, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer. I believe we meet all the requirements per staff and meet all your requirements. So if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have a quick one. You said that there's only the only lighting on it would be a, you know, a small porch type light attached to the door or above the door. With the height of this tower, does it require any other like aircraft lighting or?
No, we have the FAA back, and it has a determination no hazard and no lighting. The rule of thumb, unless there's an airport within proximity, the rule of thumb is anything over 200 feet requires lighting. Anything under 200 feet does not. And that's why if you see requests coming through that are 199 feet, that's the reason why, so that they stay under that 200-foot threshold.
Okay, there you
go. Let you go, Nancy.
Pardon?
Let you. The other question I had was, just out of curiosity, do you have the map for the coverage map, like the before and after the end of the day?
No, and the reason being, with a capacity site, it's a little bit different than a coverage site. When the networks were first built out, propagation maps were the big tool that showed, you know, these 3 to 6 mile radiuses around the proposed site. But with the capacity site, it's not the same level of coverage, because what's happening is it's infilling that other area. So it doesn't have the same level of coverage that a regular coverage site would. So they do not typically provide us with coverage maps for those.
And I ask you, is my Verizon phone going to get better?
If you're in that area, yes, it would. Absolutely.
What's that mean, in that area?
In that area? Well, I mean, if you're off on the east end of the county, you know, not necessarily, but if you're in that general vicinity, what basically happens is when you're driving along a road and you go from one, say these are your two cell towers, and you're coming along the road here, you're picking up the signal from this tower. As you traverse towards the other tower, somewhere in between, depending on the usage of each of the towers, your call will shift from this tower to this tower. Now, it's not an exact center point, because you could have thousands of people using this one and only a few people using this one, so you're going to transfer over to this tower a little bit faster. So it's, if you're in that general vicinity, you will definitely expect much better coverage.
And the vision used to be much more distinct. I can remember lots of times going east on I-80, and by golly, you knew exactly where this was covered.
Yeah. It depends. I mean, you could have a big population base over near this tower, and that's going to eat up that tower's signal a lot faster than the one that may be a little bit more rural.
Is there any, because of the network traffic and things, is there any hardwiring other than power that needs to go? Like, do you run fiber into these things? Or?
Yeah, typically, yeah, they will tie into existing fiber network. Correct. Yeah, otherwise it's just power and telephone are the two connections that they need.
I live on the left picture. I live just off the top right-hand corner. My house is almost in that picture. And I know several people that live up just north of there, like off of Deer Run and those roads that is a bandwidth wasteland. There is no broadband of any type, so anything that brings more bandwidth into that area, I think, will be long-term helpful to them.
And that should enhance, you know, obviously enhance right immediately adjacent to this area, but it will also enhance the two up to the north as well.
Right. There's one off of 190th or something right there off of George Washington Carver. All right. I don't have anything else.
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Now's the time for public comment. Do you, sir, want to come to the podium and give your name and address?
My name is John Vitzel, 2632 North Dakota. I'm that guy right here. My only concern is, which is probably nothing to be concerned at all, but I can tell the date right here. We got a huge amount of water coming down through here to keep this thing filled. And you're not going to be cutting the drain tile or grading this hill off, are you?
No.
That was my only question.
No.
Yeah. Just going to put a slab up in the tower. That's all I got. I just didn't want to cut my $1 million lake off so I couldn't fish.
Valid question.
I can certainly address that. We would obviously work with the county staff to make sure that, you know, we meet all their requirements for the location as far as, you know, going through there with the access easement and so forth and so on. But as far as going underground, the only thing that goes underground is the caisson that supports the tower, and it depends on the soil as to how deep they go, but typically they're about 30 foot deep. So there would not be any other cutting other than that. Other than to run the fiber and the telephone line along that road.
When are you planning construction?
Well, I think this is in the third quarter of this year, which would be by the end of August, early September is the goal. But then again, obviously, we've got to get through here, you know, through the process as well as getting any building permits and all that. So we're hopeful by September.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alternatives.
Oh yeah. Sorry. There you go.
I move that we recommend approval of a conditional use permit, CUP08-14, and to the County Board of Adjustments. Second?
I second.
Any further discussion? We have a motion to approve, and under number two, can we have roll call, please?
Smith?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Wendt?
Yes.
Towser?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Nine other business. Number 10, follow up on items recommended to the Board of Supervisors and Board of Adjustment.
I don't even know what. I know you had the pyramid cell tower out on 3035 there that was, I believe, approved by the Board of Adjustment on Wednesday. Other than that, the first phase of Cameron Farm subdivision has been approved, and I'm not sure if that's been recorded yet or not, but and they did start some of the grading and earthwork on that one a while ago, which they have every right to do. So that wasn't out. It's just before the check fell in lots, and obviously had to finish it up with us. But that was the final plat process, other than getting some of the particular paperwork done and fixed with them, was pretty seamless. So. And I think when they first came to the commission, it was going to be a three-phase project, and they actually combined the first two phases because they were getting, I think, a lot of preliminary luck on selling lots. So now a two-phase subdivision. So I think the first phase was 31 lots. And then second phase. So, but I think that's everything that's been on the docket. I haven't been in the commission in a while, so.
All right. Charlie gets to do the whole thing tonight.
The only thing I'll talk about with the long-range planning update, I know Nancy Kauser had the opportunity to represent the Planning and Zoning Commission through the visioning work that Story County has been doing, the Board of Supervisors. They brought in the Institute for Decision Making, IDM, from the University of Northern Iowa, to come up with their draft vision, some value statements, and some kind of guiding objectives and goals for Story County as we go about starting our coordinated long-range planning efforts. We have those have been delivered to us in draft format, and now the next phase will be over the next several months on into probably October, November, validating what we heard through the small group exercises and throughout Story County and working with the communities to see if it truly will be a comprehensive approach. And what I mean by that, beyond the Story County government, it would involve all the other communities or a vast majority of them. So our work is still ahead of us. And then once that's finished, we'll do the RFP and bring someone in to do the coordinated long-range plan. We just can't do that until we know what the overall scope will be.
Comments from fellow commissioners?
I think it's nice to have this extra opportunity to thank Leanne for all you've done for us and all the guidance that you've provided to those of us that have come on commission, the commission lately. And I don't know, last week I was kind of, or last month I was kind of shocked. So I just think to say, thank you.
I'll concur with that.
Yes, we all wish you well. It'll be fun to watch your development. No. I move we adjourn. Aye.
Yes, all in favor. I'm sorry.
Aye.